Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the program, everybody. You're listening to the South Bay Show, South Bay Spotlight, on Thursday, August 13th, 2020. I'm your host, Jackie Balustra. Thank you for tuning in. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and there is no better place to do just that. This segment of the South Bay Show is brought to you by Your Actualized Visions. A local advertising agency, Your Actualized Visions offers all your advertising needs under one roof. From logo design, business cards, banners, and signage, to online services such as website design, SEO management, promotional videos, reputation management, and loyalty promotions, you name it, and Your Actualized Visions will handle it for you on time and under budget. Built on the needs of their clients, Your Actualized Visions is competitively priced and economical, saving you money and greatly enhancing your bottom line. At Your Actualized Visions, customer service is all local with one point of contact. No more dealing with robo-answering machines, getting the runaround, or speaking to someone in another country. Your Actualized Visions understands your hyper-local advertising needs and focuses on bringing you real clients. They do not buy likes, followers, or fake results. Your campaigns are real, built with real community followers who want to purchase your services and products. The only thing standing in the way of your company's success is you now picking up the phone right now and calling Your Actualized Visions at 310-413-8773. To learn more about what Your Actualized Visions can do for you and your company, visit the website at youractualizedvisions.com. Your Actualized Visions, your dreams today, not someday. You can learn more about the show and listen to prior episodes on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show or on my website, southbaybyjackie.com. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose, that's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. And joining me this morning is our co-host and producer, Deanne Chase, founder of Chase Law Group. For all your business law needs, visit the website at southbaybusinesslawyers.com. Good morning, Deanne. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Jackie. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am well. I just wanted to mention again for our listeners that are wondering where the heck is Joe. Joe took a teaching job this summer. So he's been unable to join us for the Thursday program. He's still able to do the Friday, but he hasn't been around Thursday, so I've taken over hosting duties. And, Deanne, I want to thank you again for stepping in and handling the producing and co-hosting jobs because, I wouldn't be doing this if you didn't. So I want to thank you again. And we have just a couple of more weeks. We take the week off for the Labor Day weekend. And then the week after that, Joe will be returning and all will go back to normal. But as I said, I just want to thank you again for doing this for me. And the community.
Absolutely. No, I mean, when Jackie calls and asks for help, I'm all in. But this has been fun. It's been kind of a little bit of an adventure. So it's been great. I always love the South Bay Show anyway. So it was fun to see behind the scenes, you know.
Magic. Yeah. Well, again. The magic of the South Bay Show. So I'm very excited about our guest this morning and our topic because, as you know, food ranks number one on the list of things to talk about. I don't know. Have we had any restaurateurs on to talk about, you know, how the pandemic has affected them firsthand? I mean, I know we've all talked to people, but I don't think we've had anybody on.
I don't think we've actually have, not that I know of. But we will this morning.
Well, we will this morning, and we'll learn. We'll hear it firsthand. So, Deanne, who is our guest this morning?
Yeah, so this morning we have two well-established restaurateurs in the South Bay. So let me kind of talk about our guests this morning. So we're going to start with Lisa Hemmett, owner of Lido de Manhattan Restaurant in Manhattan Beach and Playa Hermosa Restaurant in Hermosa Beach. We're waiting for just we're waiting for Lisa to call in. Hopefully we'll have her this morning, but I'll still kind of read a little bit about her. And then we also have Nancy Brankovic from operating partner of Salsa in El Segundo. So about Lisa, Lisa grew up in Mount Vernon, Washington, a small town just north of Seattle. In 1999, Lisa matriculated into the entrepreneurial program at the University of Southern California and graduated magna cum laude in 2003. During her years at USC, she co-founded an events planning company called Summertime Entertainment and started her own dessert business, selling homemade pies at farmers markets all over Western Washington. In 2004, Lisa took over ownership of Lido di Manhattan Restaurant, an Italian-Californian fusion-style restaurant. With a genuine belief in Lido's enormous potential, she has revamped the atmosphere and livened up the restaurant with special events, happy hours, live music, and wine tastings, all fueled by an energetic kitchen staff and an innovative new outlook. Lisa has been looking for the right opportunity to expand and landed on the Hermosa Pier. Playa Hermosa Fish and Oyster Restaurant has had 3.5 years of success to date at the Hermosa Beach Pier. And now, with her husband and another business partner, she is working on opening another restaurant in Paso Robles, California. In Bloom will be a farm-to-table, wine country-style restaurant in the brand-new Paso Market Walk and will be opening in the winter of 2020. So she's very busy. So we're hoping that she'll be able to join us in a bit. So Nancy is on the call. Nancy's one of my favorite people in the South Bay. She began her career as a teenager in her family's Arizona restaurants, bussing tables to make gas money. What began as an after-school job blossomed into a career when she began managing a restaurant while attending the University of Arizona and learned the hotel business at the Westin La Paloma after finishing school. She moved to Los Angeles after she fell in love with Manhattan Beach while visiting friends and has been living in the community ever since, beginning her career as director of catering and special events with Sims Restaurants in 2010. She left Sims as director of marketing and PR in 2016 and was excited to team up with Chef Ann at Sausal in El Segundo. Having gained so much as a resident of Manhattan Beach, she strives to give back to her community by serving on the board of directors for the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce, acting as chair of the board in her final year. She produced the first ever Bite at the Beach event in Manhattan Beach, a food and craft beer festival to showcase the best the South Bay has to offer, and co-founded the Chili Cook-Off, benefiting the Manhattan Beach Firefighters Burn Fund. So, welcome, Nancy, and hopefully we'll have Lisa join us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Nancy. Good morning. Good morning, and thank you for joining us. It's been a while.
Thank you.
It's been a while.
Yes, I know. It has been a while. I haven't done very much in South Bay for a little bit, so I'm like super pumped that COVID brought me home. I can say, I guess.
Oh,
the silver lining. Wait, the silver lining always.
There's a silver lining on every cloud, I'll tell you.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, Deanne was just reading your bio, and I noticed it when she initially sent it to me. That chili cook-off that you produced the first one, that was a great event. That was a fantastic event.
It was so fun, wasn't it? I thought that was one of the best ones. That's all Suzanne Scherer came to me and said, let's do something for the firemen. I was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay.
They did it 2 years in a row, maybe 3 years in a row, and then it just went away. Do you have any idea why?
Yeah, you know, what happened was we produced that, Suzanne and I, actually through the Neptunian Women's Club, and we really kind of did it just to give them an opportunity to see what they could do to raise some money. And I was working with Steve Fairbrother, who's a fireman at the Station One in Manhattan Beach. He's a wonderful dude and, like, super, super passionate about the Burn Foundation. And what they do basically is if anybody is displaced after a fire or any kind of side effect from the fire, this foundation provides resources for them to kind of get back on their feet. And so the firemen go out and put out the fire, and most fire departments kind of finish their job there. And the Manhattan Beach Fire Department started this foundation and really supports people after with, like, the residual effects of what happens when there's a fire in your home. And we thought that was so interesting and really cool and so unique to Manhattan Beach, I think. And so we became really passionate about it, and I thought, well, firemen and chili kind of go hand in hand. And originally we thought it would be a fun kind of community cook-off, but we didn't want anyone to – we didn't want it to be, like, competitive negatively. So instead we recruited all our friends in the restaurants, and so the chefs brought their famous chilies. So chefs around the South Bay that are not famous for chili, everyone is proud of the chili they make at home, right? So they all bring it, and we had a really fun contest, and Steve created this trophy with, like, a golden ladle. It was a great time. Super, super fun. Then they took it over and were doing it on their own and producing it just from the fire, the firemen were producing it together without the Neptunian Women's Club. And I think that they were going really strong. And then, you know, unfortunately with COVID and all these other things that start to happen, their training changed, and I don't think they had as much time to do it. So I'm not really sure. I have to follow up with Steve, and maybe we'll get it going again.
Yeah, no, that was a fantastic event. And the best part was, it took place in the firehouse over there on 15th Street. It's an incredible facility, and and it was actually in the firehouse, you know. And they had that, you know, they had plenty of room outdoor, and they had plenty of room inside for kids to run around. It was a family oriented event, and the food was, I mean, is there anything better?
I know,
you know, 20 different types of chili, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, it was the perfect South Bay event to me. Like, very, very family friendly. It was short, you know, only 2 hours. The kids had a lot of fun. The firemen made hot dogs for the kids, and the kids played with the fire hoses. It was really a good time.
It was a good time. I was
like
sorry to
see
that.
It sounds like something that should be revived. Yeah, post-COVID, maybe.
It should
be. We could definitely look back into getting that going, because that's a great
you
event.
You know what? Yeah. If Steve's listening, or if he's not, I'm going to promise on his behalf that it'll come back. He and I will figure it out. We'll call Suzanne and we'll make it happen.
You know, there goes how small is the South Bay. Steve and my husband ski together. There you go. They go on ski trips
together.
Wow,
that is very small.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah,
yeah,
and my law firm actually helped the firefighters put the Burn Foundation together. So, six degrees of separation here in the South Bay. Yeah.
The South Bay is a special place. Yeah, very magical.
It really is. It
is. It
really is.
So, all right, so... Sasol, we know that I first met you when you were still at with the Sims Group, and then you went into co-owner partnership operating partner for Sasol. How long has Sasol been open?
We just celebrated our fifth birthday in September.
5 years! Wow, that went fast.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah. I know.
Wow.
It also kind of feels like a million. But, yeah, I know what you mean. It goes really quickly.
It does go
well,
really quickly.
Well, you guys have been, and you guys have been doing, after Sasol, there are other restaurants that you guys have opened in the last 5 years. What are they called, and where are they located?
So, unfortunately, the economic system that we live in these days shuttered them. But we opened Jaffa on 3rd Street in the Fairfax District, essentially, on 3rd Street and Crescent Heights about 3 years ago. And then we opened a second location of Jaffa in the Palms neighborhood of Culver City on Venice Boulevard and Goldwyn. And then we unfortunately had to close those at the beginning of the year. And then in the meantime, had opened a concept with our good friend Bob in Hermosa Beach called Mosa, and we loved that restaurant. And just as we were kind of on the upswing, COVID kind of closed us down. So we're not going to be reopening that with Bob, although I do think that Bob found another partner and is going to be able to reopen. So we're really excited for him. So the restaurant will still be there, but Ann and I are just focusing on Sasol for the time being.
Oh,
wow.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Oh, definitely a lot of impact from COVID.
Yeah. That's the restaurant business. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough in perfect conditions. So
it's not just restaurants though. You know, I'm seeing stats that over half of the businesses that have shut down at some point during COVID are not going to reopen.
Yeah,
it's
really
it's
sad.
Support. It's awful. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible. But but let's get back to Sasol. All right.
Sure.
First off, El Segundo. It's still very much a hidden gem, I mean, there's so much going on there, but there are still so many people that don't know. You know, if you're heading north on Sepulveda, you got to make that left, you know, to get there. It's not just all the commercial buildings on Sepulveda. There's so much more. And it's it's such a charming town, and we all know they call it, you know, Mayberry by the Sea. And it was interesting. I think I told you this story years ago. Many, many years ago, one Sunday afternoon, I said to my husband, we like to take drives on the weekend and check out different neighborhoods and different areas. And one day I said to him, let's go check out El Segundo. This is a long time ago, 20 years at least. And he said, what's there? I said, I don't know. I've never really been there. I've driven through, but I really didn't know what was going on. So I said, let's take a drive up. We can have lunch. There's restaurants there. Let's go have lunch. So we drove over there. And as I said, this was a Sunday afternoon. And it was a ghost town. I mean, it was a ghost town.
Oh, really?
Nothing was open. None of the restaurants were open. None of the businesses were open. I mean, even the small gyms, and nothing was open. And we're walking around going, what is going on here? You know, and then I was thinking, well, maybe they have, you know, there are still some old laws on the books. Like, you know, that there, you know, around the country, there are still blue laws, you know, regarding alcohol. And there are still laws in a lot of towns where, you know, you don't open for business on Sunday. You know, I know back east there are a lot of them. So I was thinking, oh, maybe they have one of those, you know, laws still on the book where you know, you don't open for business on Sunday. Okay, fast forward a couple of years after that, Rock and Brews opens.
Right.
And not long after that, the El Segundo Museum of Art opens. And it was like those two things just blew the lid off of El Segundo.
Yeah.
Now, and of course, since then, you know, much more has happened since then, but it was like that was the turning point.
And I think when Rob opened the brewery, it made a huge difference in what was going on in the downtown area, too.
Yes. El Segundo Brewery. Absolutely. It was like those three things happened very quickly. And after that, as I said, blew it off. And then, you know, other restaurants, other businesses opened, and Sasol. And you're right there at that intersection. As we know, Rockin' Brews closed earlier this year. But you're right. You were right across the street from Rockin' Brews. You're right across the street from the museum, just down the block from the brewery. Give us a little background on Sasol for anybody that is not familiar with it.
Sure. Chef Van is super passionate about Mexican food. And, well, anyone who's ever worked in a kitchen in Los Angeles has the great privilege of eating the best food in all of America. And it's not the stuff that you're eating when you come into the restaurant, I promise. It's family meal. And, you know, most of our cooks tend to come from Mexico, Guatemala, and they come up into this country and are working in kitchens. It seems to be like a really great place. They kind of feel like family. And we're really lucky to work with some really talented chefs that come from Oaxaca. And Chef loves Mexican food. So for family meal every day, they would cook together. And they would teach their grandmother's recipes to her. And she'd go home and play with them and was just obsessed with it. When she decided she wanted to strike out on her own and open a kind of Mexican-inspired restaurant. We don't call it Mexican food. We call it Nuevo Rancho. The restaurant's name, Sausal, is after Rancho Sausal Redondo, which is what this area used to be, a big ranchero. And it was kind of influenced by the Mexican and Spanish settlers in this area when California first became a state, and the way that they cooked back then, big open fires and slow braised meats and eating smoky tacos and things like that. And that's where our food inspiration comes from. So it's really kind of the original California food is what I always like to tell people. And Sausal or El Segundo seemed kind of like the perfect place for it. You know, we had roots in the South Bay, and Manhattan Beach was packed. And Sausal was ready, El Segundo was ready to pop, and it seemed like a really good location. And so Chef pounced on it and built it, and then I came and joined her after it was open. So and then kind of helped with the operations and got it kind of going in the right direction. And we've been really fortunate that people in the community have really embraced us. They're really proud to have us in the neighborhood, and we're really proud to be part of it. And watching everything grow, and Rob going from this little tasting room that had four bar stools, and now he has this giant tasting room, and he opened the Slice and Pine around the corner. And, you know, it's just been really fun to kind of be watching what I saw the same thing, Jackie, when you first went through El Segundo with, like, not a lot of people walking around. And now, you know, people are kind of walking from restaurant to restaurant and grabbing drinks, and it's fun. It's a really, it's a nice walkable community. Everyone really knows each other. It's really nice.
It is. It is. I love it. I love it. I mean,
yeah,
I love it. I love everything that's going
on
in El Segundo.
Fun little town. Like you said, very walkable, a lot going on now. Definitely not a ghost town when you head to El Segundo anymore.
Right.
And let me say, it also has the most amazing food. I mean, incredible flavors.
It is.
One of my favorite restaurants.
It is.
It is.
And let me ask you, so the recipes, you know, when you said the original California food, are these recipes from some of your cook, their actual family recipes that have passed down generation to generation?
Well, I will say that our famous mole is definitely something that was worked on as a team based on generational influence, for sure. Chef Anne is incredibly intuitive when it comes to food. She's got such a great palate, and she really kind of can take like an old family recipe and really kind of elevate it to almost like a kind of what we know as fine dining, right? Like French cuisine or something. She adds these little fun surprise elements that really kind of take it to a next level. So I would say that the recipes have been developed in tandem with some people that, you know, definitely brought a cooking tradition, but it's definitely her kind of creative input that makes it so unique, I think.
Yeah. I was wondering if there was, you know, because I don't know anybody that makes the same kind of food as Sasol.
It's really unique. Yeah.
It is, but I remember several years ago there were a couple of restaurateurs that attempted what they call high class Mexican food. Oh, not high class, what's the word I'm looking for? Sophisticated Mexican food or something like that. High-end Mexican food.
Fancy.
Which didn't go over. it didn't go over well. They didn't succeed.
Yeah, I think what people don't quite understand about restaurants, this is just my observation from kind of talking to people in general. For example, our beef barbacoa that we make into tacos, first we source the best cut that we can find. So we're usually buying a quality one step higher than kind of entry level quality. And then we trim it in the kitchen. We smoke it for several hours. Then it comes out and rests. And then we braise it for several hours. Then it comes out and rests. And then we, take it down off of the bone, pull it into individual portions. When someone orders it, then we pick it up, kind of like heat it on the plancha. But really, ultimately, it takes about 24 to 36 hours to create any of the base meat product. And so if you go into a Mexican restaurant and you're getting kind of like a quick carne asada, which is also delicious, I love that food. I'm not disparaging it in any way. Completely different product. And the amount of hours that it takes to make it is just two different things. So when you're going kind of to a more traditional way as opposed to like maybe like a taco truck kind of pickup, it just takes so much more time. So it's more expensive. And there's a block, I think, when you go, well, I can get a taco for $2 down the street. How come this taco is $5? And we're making the tortillas in-house. We're making the meat, you know, in this long, slow process. We're pickling the onions that go on top. Everything is made in our kitchen. And I think that when you take a bite of the taco, you can definitely tell. But there's a little bit of a kind of block there that takes a second to get past to understand what makes it better than a taco that you've had before. And I think that that's why there's been always a struggle for anybody who's trying to do like a high-end Mexican restaurant, in my opinion.
And you said you don't call it.
That makes a lot of sense.
You don't call it Mexican. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've never called it Mexican because it's not kind of, I think, what people think of as Mexican food, but it's certainly Mexican-inspired. When I have to choose a category on Yelp for what we are, we pick Mexican, right? It's the most appropriate choice. But when we're talking about what we do, it's a little bit different. It's definitely like kind of old-fashioned cooking. So, and then I think it's really smart that, you know, another thing that we do is not just tacos, right? So we have like these yummy grilled plates. We do arroz con pollo that we do on an open wood fire grill. You can see the wood fire grill when you come into the restaurant. You can watch the cooks making all the food. Chef is famous for her burger. She invented the Simsy's burger. So we always have a really good burger on our menu. And so I think it's kind of a fun place where you can get anything that you want. We thought that it would be really difficult to get families to want to come in because the food's kind of spicy. It's not necessarily like a restaurant I think that kids would really be into, but it turns out that the kids are the ones asking to come in. They love our tacos. So it's pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
Uh-huh. That is awesome. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to take a really quick station break a little early. And we have a lot more to talk about. So I'm your host, Jackie Balestra. And you're listening to The South Bay Show, a hyper-local podcast that airs every Thursday and Friday morning at 8 a.m. on Blog Talk Radio. The show features the many fabulous things to do, places to go, and people to know in our South Bay. From El Segundo to the Palos Verdes Peninsula, we cover it all. So be sure to tune in each week to keep up with what's going down in our beachside bubble. Now, this morning, we're speaking with Nancy Brankovich from Sasal in El Segundo, and we're just discussing food and Deanne, I was going to say it's a good thing this is an audio cast and not a video cast because the drool, when Nancy was just describing all that food, I'm sitting here drooling and now my top is all wet. So, as I mentioned,
the flavors
at the top,
are just amazing.
Yeah.
Words don't describe the flavors, you know, when you bite into some of these amazing, amazing meals.
Yeah, and you said, smoky, Nancy, smoky. You know, I love smoky. You know, even something as simple when it comes to, like, ribs, I don't like the sweet. I like the smoky. And I've eaten at your restaurant several times, and almost everything, there's a little smoky to it, a little bit of smoky.
Yeah. It's a good flavor. I think it really adds like a depth that you can't find with any other element. You know, that smoke flavor is so good. And it's pretty signature to what we do there.
You know, it should be included in the four basic tastes. What is it? Salty, tart, bitter. I don't know.
Bitter.
But smoky should definitely be included in that list.
Yeah.
Because, as you
know.
I've
seen that
Go ahead.
I don't know if you've seen that cookbook, Salt, Acid, Fat, Heat.
Yes, I saw the documentary.
Yeah.
I saw the documentary,
So, with Michael Pollan. He's great, by the way. But there you go, fire is one of them. So I think that we should stop worrying about our taste buds and instead start worrying about where we cook our food. Definitely talk about it from that perspective.
Exactly. That's right. That was a good little documentary. And as we all know, you know, I could barbecue shoe leather and it would be delicious. So, that's kind of my favorite. So, COVID, coronavirus pandemic slams into us in March, turns everybody's world upside down. And I mean the whole world, you know, not just us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I would like for you to take us through the timeline of your specific experience when they shut us down, when they open you up, when they shut you back down. Just can you take us through that and tell us how you were feeling at the time? Like when this happened, like did your heart just drop into your stomach?
We were all watching the news, right? So I remember at the end of February, I was spending a lot of my time at Mosa in Hermosa Beach. And, you know, of course, this is the only thing people were talking about. Once the Super Bowl was over, everything was COVID, right? So oh, have you heard, you know, Italy locked down? Oh, have you heard, you know, they're doing the same thing in England? And so people are talking about it constantly. We all had very strong opinions. I think every American always thinks that business comes first. And I certainly was not expecting us to go on a full lockdown, to be honest. And I think at that time, all of us were naive enough to believe that we are such a great country that we're going to get this under control and we're not going to have to do it. I mean, that was definitely my opinion. So time goes on and it's getting, you know, videos are coming out about how to eat food safely and wearing gloves and, you know, use a face covering and all those scary things that we're used to seeing. And our business started to get really slow by the end of February. And people were starting to get a little bit more scared of going out. In the beginning of March, we were definitely noticing a significant slowdown. And talked to a lot of restaurateurs in the South Bay, and everyone else was experiencing the same thing. There was a lot of slowing down that was happening. People were just going out less. That was the famous toilet paper shortages started right about that time. So you can tell people were, like, going shopping and trying to stay home. And then San Francisco got their stay-at-home order. I think it was, like, around the 12th or 13th that I read about that. I was at Mosa on Sunday night. I have to check the calendar to confirm the date, 15th or 16th, whatever. On that Sunday night, we don't show television there at that restaurant. So I was not watching the news. And around 8:30, 9 o'clock, I think it was about 9 o'clock, Gavin Newsom came on the news. And that was when he started talking about us having a stay-at-home order and restaurants and bars had to close down immediately. My friends, I have a great group of friends, all started blowing up my phone with text messages. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And I was like, what are you talking about? I was just walking around the restaurant. And so I started looking up the news stories, and sure enough, it's like, you know, we got to close down the restaurants. This is unprecedented. I've never been through anything like this before, and just like everybody. And so I started calling my business partners. I was like, I don't know if you guys are watching the news. I'm getting text messages about this. I think we're not allowed to open tomorrow. And that really has been the communication about COVID to restaurants, in my experience, is and I think that this is the part that most of the public isn't aware of, is I'm getting the news at the same time that everyone else is. No one's like calling up a list of restaurant owners and saying, hey, in 2 days, we're going to issue a stay-at-home order, so plan for this. And you're going to have to close down by Monday and tell your entire staff not to come to work, and figure it out. Figure out what you want to do. At that point, we realized we could do takeout, but we weren't really built for takeout in either restaurant. Mm-hmm. We were doing a really small proportion of our business was takeaway. And, you know, simple things. We didn't have enough containers in the back to even execute a full takeout program. You know, we had, like, leftover containers, and we weren't prepared for it at all. Sure enough, we discovered that, you know, we were going to have to close down the restaurant. So that night I texted all of the staff that were supposed to come in the next day. I called my GM over at Salsal, told her to do the same, don't come to work. And then we spent the next week kind of giving our staff all the food we had in the walk-in so they could take it home, and helping them all fill out unemployment paperwork, which I don't know a lot of restaurant people who've ever done that before. Restaurant business is a great mover in our economy. And when you lose one job, you can literally walk next door and get another one. I mean, it's just, that's kind of how restaurants are. And I know I'd never filled out unemployment paperwork before. So I was sitting with my staff trying to help them with that. And that's what we did for the next week, just kind of help everybody. And
the information was just coming in so many different directions, but like you said, not coming directly to anyone. So it was like, you know, people are like reading the paper and say, wait, are we supposed to be doing this? And, and like you said, with the unemployment and, you know, for my law practice, you know, we work with a lot of businesses, a lot of different types of businesses. And we were just, you know, trying to keep up as well. People, you know, all our clients were like, you know, we're shutting down, we're furloughing, you know, what's the difference between a furlough and a layoff, and, you know, are we going to reopen, and all these different things going on.
Yeah.
When you have your staff to that looking to you for answers, it's really a difficult position to be in.
Yeah, it's tough because you really, you know, you're doing your best. And, you know, I mean, basically all I did was just I was on Google every morning and calling every broker I had for insurance saying, what do I do? Do you guys have any information? Calling my, I have a, kind of a, like an on-call HR company, calling them, do you have any documents? What am I supposed to do? We didn't want to do the wrong thing for our staff because we wanted to make sure they got unemployment. And so we didn't want to, we didn't know, do we terminate them? Do we say that they're furloughed? Do we say it's temporary? Are they supposed to be looking for work? How are they supposed to be looking for work? Like, it was very complicated. And, you know, it was a little bit of kind of village mentality too, like calling your neighbor, what are you doing? You know, how are you handling it? What did you do for your staff? And that's what we were really doing, is kind of helping each other get through it and, you know, struggle, you know, kind of searching for information and figuring it out. You know, the information continues to come to us that way. When we were at Southall, we kind of did some tweaks. We changed our branding a little and ended up doing, we switched our plates from the plates that you guys are used to with a kind of big meats and sides and things like that, and took all of our flavors and put them in a portable format. So we started making burritos and bowls and tacos because we thought that would travel the best and people could still get the flavors of Southall at home without having to worry about the food degrading kind of in the transportation process. And that took a little bit of time, and we actually kind of rebranded ourselves, and we're now calling ourselves Sausalito. You know, for the time being, our logo is a different color, and we're having fun with it, and people are really into it. I think it's, the food is great, and it lends itself well to where we are now, which is, you know, kind of eating takeaway food, you know, which sometimes can sit for 20 minutes. And so we had to figure that out, that process of, you know, of making our food more accessible. We were doing really well with to-go, and then we were watching the news right before 4th of July, and Gavin Newsom came on at 12 o'clock and said, great news, restaurants can reopen today. And so we're watching the news. We're like, what does that mean? We don't know what that means. What capacity? What are the rules? Do we have to wear PPE? Do we, are we allowed to sit inside? Are we allowed to sit outside? Do the tables have to be 6 feet apart? We don't know. So we're refreshing the CDC website. It's really funny. We're sitting there just refreshing the website, waiting for the documents to come up to tell us what we have to do. We don't know. And at the same time, the phone starts ringing off the hook, and well-intentioned, lovely guests who have been dying for us to reopen are like, are you guys going to open? Are you open? The governor says you can
open.
Oh, boy. Can I make a reservation? Yeah. And we're like, we're figuring it out. We don't know.
I get a margarita. And, we need the margaritas.
Yeah, so, yeah, we're like, I mean, we're going to do our best. Like, give us a few minutes. Let me call you back. And so we're, you know, have one person on the phone, and, you know, we're over here refreshing the screen. I had employees coming in. What do we do now? And I'm like, I don't know. Give me a couple of days, you know. So we kind of read through the restrictions, and we quickly turned our dining room. We actually opened that first Friday, and we were pretty excited about it. We made sure our tables were more than 6 feet apart, that nobody would be there. We kind of put sanitized signs on the tables where we knew they were clean. We put do not sit here, social distancing, you know, to mark off the tables that nobody should sit at. We got everybody face masks, gloves, you know, everything that we were supposed to do to open safely, called our staff that had been unemployed, 1 hour notice. Can you come to work tonight? Yes. And they were there.
Wow.
I mean, our staff has been unbelievable, unbelievable. They've been so great. And honestly, I have to say that the upside to all of these switches back and forth has been the community spirit has been unbelievably positive. Our guests have been so positive. Our staff has been so positive. There's never been a moment where anyone was like, forget this, I don't want to wear gloves. You know, everyone's just doing the right thing. And it's been great to watch. And then, of course, I think a very good social movement happened a couple of days later, and protests started happening across the country for Black Lives Matter. And on our third day of being open, we got shut down for curfew. And so that Friday we were open, and on Sunday we had to close for curfew. And then we had curfew on Monday, and then Tuesday was blackout Tuesday, and no businesses were open. And so we participated in that and did not open our business. And then on Wednesday we had curfew, but it wasn't until like 8 o'clock. So we were able to get through most of dinner service. And then thankfully the curfews were lifted kind of by the weekend. And so then we continued that week and a half of kind of 40% capacity in our restaurant to about another week later, or maybe it was 2 weeks later. I'm sorry, the weeks are kind of melting together, but then we got shut down for indoor operations because of the spike, which was frustrating because we felt like we were doing everything correct. Everybody was required to wear a mask when they were in the restaurant. We were following all the protocols. So it's frustrating to put all that effort in. We were able to bring back some of our staff, and now we had to let them go again because we only have 4 tables outside. And right. We just didn't need them again. And so then they went back on unemployment, and we immediately started soliciting the city to build outdoor seating. And the city of El Segundo, and led by Mayor Drew Boyles, has been unbelievably supportive. Everything has been business first. I mean, really, honestly, Rob and Tom at El Segundo Brewing Company were able to get the whole Franklin Richmond Street closed, and there's a huge outdoor dining area. It is beautiful. If you haven't seen it yet, you should definitely go. The Slice and Pint has a big six section of it, so you can go and sit and eat pizza and drink beer and drink wine and sit outside and be really safe. DeLuca has some tables out there. Second City Bistro has tables out there. It's really cool. At the same time, we were soliciting the city to let us build onto parklets out in front of our restaurant. And we were able to work with our old partner at Mosa. Bob is a builder. Bob's builder. And he quickly put his team together, and we built a deck in a matter of days in front of our restaurant. And Sam at the city was unbelievably supportive and quickly got everything turned around and approved so that we had the opportunity to use those parklets through the end of currently we're through September. We're really all hoping that it's going to get extended, considering that it doesn't look like we're going to get indoor dining anytime soon. But we were able to do that. We, silver lining on every cloud. We'd closed Jaffa earlier this year, so we were able to run over there and grab a bunch of tables and bring them back over here and set them up on our new deck, strung some lights, got some speakers. It's a great time. We're having a lot of fun.
Beautiful.
Out there.
It's really beautiful. It's amazing how beautiful
you.
These locations are.
Yeah.
I know. It's been really fun. And so, I spend a lot of my time. I have an amazing staff at South Sol. They've all come back, super flexible, as we open and close and open and close. Our GM over there, Amy, is incredibly talented. She does a really good job. And so I've been spending my time kind of like going around and seeing what other people are doing. And, downtown Manhattan Beach is amazing. So many people have built outdoor dining in the parklets. Metlocks on a weekend is a great time. A guitarist will come out sometimes or something like that. And, you go over to Shade Hotel and buy a bottle of wine and go sit in the outdoor area with your friends. And it's a good time. I run into people all the time. It's kind of like a little social and fun. And, it kind of feels like we're creating that European outdoor dining now, which, yeah. I mean, it's always been a wonder we haven't had that living this close to the beach, that there hasn't been more outdoor dining where you can look at the ocean. So I feel like we're kind of, everybody loves it. It's been a really positive effect.
I think pivot is the word, right?
Pardon?
Pivot. Yeah. Pivot is the word.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Pivot to the left, pivot to the right, pivot, you're running and pivoting and, change your business model and, go from indoors to outdoors and it seems like a lot of things are accelerating. Like people are now, like you said, outdoor dining is something that a lot of cities have had issues with over the years for permitting and people objecting to outdoor dining. And now it's like a quick pivot. And then within weeks, these beautiful outdoor seating arrangements with lights and artwork has popped up and really made an impact.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I think, the guys that have Rockefeller did a really good job in front of their space, both in Manhattan Beach and in Hermosa. And when you go to Hermosa, the barricades all have, like really fun street art. And it's beautiful. I mean, I think it's really neat. And people are really into it. And I think everyone's really acting in good faith and doing the right thing. Once in a while, you have that guy who shows up and says they don't want to wear their mask. And it's, frustrating. And you just politely say, I'm sorry, you have to put it on. You can't eat here without it. Most people get it. My poor staff.
No shoes.
So we are in the full of summer when it's hot and they're wearing face shields.
No shoes, no shirt, no masks, no service. That's the new the new sign on the door.
Masks are optional. We're outside, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, Deanne, I'm really glad that you scheduled Nancy to be here, because this is the first time I'm hearing it directly from someone that has experienced it. I mean, I've read stuff in the paper, I've seen stuff on the news, but for her to take it like that, step by step by step, it's really the first time I've heard what restaurateurs in particular have had to deal with. Another interesting part of this, Nancy, and I want your what you know about this. It seems to me that when the shutdown was first announced, when this first happened, I think most of us thought, okay, we just need a couple of weeks, maybe a month, we'll get this under control, and then we'll get back to normal. And at that time, there wasn't the outdoor dining there is now, right? People were doing takeout and stuff. People that had patios, they used their patios. I didn't see anybody really using parking lots at that point. But then when they
there was no seating allowed at all. So you weren't able to sit outside. You weren't able to sit inside. There was no seating with takeout only.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Uh-huh. So then they started to let you open up a little bit, 25% capacity, 40% capacity. And it was when they shut you down again that everybody was like, okay, this is going to take longer than anybody expected. We need to do something now. And then all of a sudden, all over the South Bay, we saw the parklets and the dining decks going up all over. I mean, downtown Torrance has shut down three streets. Riviera Village is more crowded than it's ever been.
I know. It's really fun over there. Yeah.
I know. But Manhattan, I mean, everybody, every city, it was like, okay, is that how you saw it happen? Like, everybody thought, okay, well, we'll get back to normal. We'll start opening. But when they shut you down the second time, is that when everybody said, okay, we need to be in this for the long haul, possibly?
Well, I think that the I'm putting myself in a position of speaking for an entire community here, which is really not a smart idea. But I think there was a lot of talk already about expanding into outdoor service and exceeding and building patio space before the shutdown. We were all talking about it. How do we, you know, if you have more patio space, then you can continue seating people 6 feet apart because there's only so much you can do inside. And so that was already a conversation. I know it was a conversation for us. So I'm not going to speak for everyone, but I do know we were already having that conversation. I think
you
when
are.
The second shutdown came, what happened then was that our city leaders sprung into action and took out all of the obstacles and just made it happen. And that's the big difference, is that's where proper civic leadership really, you can see the effect of proper civic leadership. It's when I called Sam at the city and said, I really need help getting this done. He said, do these things. I said, okay. I went and did them all. And then a day later, he said, go build your parklets. I mean, it was so fast. And for anyone who's ever tried to do anything with permits, that is historically the most ludicrous. If somebody had told me 2 years ago, 2 years from now, you're going to be able to get a permit to build an outdoor patio in one day, I would have laughed at them. I mean, it's like no such thing as something turning around that quickly. And this is not to disparage local government at all. It's just how the wheels turn. And, they were just super, super quick and just took out all of the obstacles, which made it super easy for us. And so I'm really grateful to them for making that happen. And our neighbors, our next door neighbor, a flower shop, we have a cupcake shop, and then we have a sandwich shop that are all connected to us in our building. And every one of them was like, Nancy, we support your build out. Of course, whatever you need from us, we'll give it to you. They took away their parking and they were super excited to be part of it, you know, and it was all about a community building and, you know, making sure each of us is successful, because if each of us is successful, the whole is more successful, you know.
Yes. And
I think
and
the message is for people to start going out and visiting these places now that, you know, it's true. The cities have been supportive in kind of, like you said, removing barriers. But now I think people need to realize, put on your mask and go out and check out these wonderful, wonderful locations. Because Nancy, like you said, these places are a lot of fun. If anything, it's kind of revitalized the spirit. Like you said, there's this community vibe. their families out. The, you know, the restaurants and the businesses really need their, you know, people to come out. And, you know, so I think that's kind of the message here is these places are fun. There's a new kind of vibe
to
it. Yeah.
It's the only thing that's going on. You can't go to the movies. You can't go to an amusement
right.
park. You know, they had the beach shut down for a while. I mean, there's nothing else to do. If you want to see people, other than the people that live under your roof, the only thing you can do is go out and eat.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's become a thing. And talking to the various, you know, chambers and city officials, you know, throughout the South Bay, this is a discussion they are already having about possibly trying to make some of these outdoor dining decks and parklets maybe down the road they become a permanent feature. You know,
I think everybody wants it. Yeah.
Everybody's onto that. And by the way, aren't we fortunate that this is something we can do year round? Because once the cold weather sets in back east, that's going to really devastate them if something hasn't been found to alleviate what's happening by then.
Right.
But
we're really lucky.
Year round.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're really lucky. Yeah. And that's something I think, you know, restaurants impact pretty much everybody's daily life. But it's easy to forget all of the other industries that are really impacted severely by this. I mean, I have a bunch of family that work in entertainment and, you know, musicians have been out of work for a year and will be for another year probably. And these are people who are gig workers essentially. So there is no unemployment to support that industry. And it's dead. It's completely gone. Everybody can't wait for a concert to come back, but no one thinks of that as a daily part of their life. But it's, you know, certainly impactful, especially here in California. And, you know, of course, you know, in studio filming is completely different than it's ever been before. Sports. I mean, there's so many things about our lives that are different. Restaurants are one piece of it that it's easy to recognize because I think we all have a daily touch with them. But, you know, there's so many other industries that have been impacted, and it's just really nice to see how people really are trying every way they can to be supportive of each other. And that's what I've gotten out of it. We're just trying to survive and not close down at this point. And I think that's kind of a universal thought process at this point.
Well, unfortunately, I think we, in this situation from the beginning, I think everybody was very optimistic that we would get it under control. We're the United States of America. We can do anything, right? Hasn't been the case. That has not been the case. And I don't know, maybe because of what I do for a living with my website, it's an event calendar. When all of this came down, I mean, my event calendar shrunk to nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, there was everybody's going to take it down. We're cancel. But then, you know, that's when I personally started thinking this is going to get way worse before it gets better. And when they started announcing, okay, now we know the Rose Bowl, the Rose Parade has been canceled. There's not going to be a Rose Bowl football game, college football. I know the Big Ten and the Pac-10 have already said there's not going to be a fall season. Radio City, they're not doing their Christmas spectacular this year. I'm already getting stuff, talking to people, stuff in February and March have already been canceled. They're not happening.
Yep.
This is going for me, I'm looking at possibly next spring, things loosening up a little bit. But I said back in April, the holiday season, you know, I mean,
I'm with you.
I've been looking long term. I've been looking at the calendar long term and seeing what's happening and talking to people, you know, that know these things. You know, I'm talking to event planners.
Yeah.
You know,
Something that's really interesting that's come out of this is famous events kind of learning a new way to do things, right? Like, I think you guys recently talked to Nick Arquette about like a new twist on White Light, White Night, where they did kind of a virtual thing at home, which I thought was really clever. A lot of people I know participated in that.
It's still coming. It's coming up August 22nd. Oh, sorry. I just want to clarify.
Yeah.
White Light is August 22nd coming up. Yeah. Buy your tickets.
And then the other thing is that's really cool is Dine LA has always been something that I think a lot of people have looked forward to in Los Angeles, and they do it twice a year in January and in July. And obviously the July Dine LA had never happened. So Dine LA put together a program, and it's free to restaurants that have participated in Dine LA before. It's a pretty significant investment. Usually we pay about $1,000 to participate. And so they've waived that fee. And what they're doing is they're promoting anything you want. It doesn't have to be a formal three-course meal. And we can do a couple of different Dine LA things. So we're participating in Dine LA this year, and we'll be doing a lunch and a dinner special like we always have. And then additionally, we're going to do a family meal to go. So if you are not comfortable eating in the restaurant, you can do a Dine LA meal at home. And then we're also offering advanced bookings on caterings. And if you book something during Dine LA, you'll get a discount when you execute your event sometime in 2021. And, you know, a lot of people are canceling weddings, canceling baby showers, bridal showers, birthday parties, and everybody wants to celebrate these things, right? So someday, 2021, when it's time to put your friends and family together, hopefully 2021, you know, celebrating in different ways. If you weren't able to have a baby shower, let's do a first birthday party. And if you eloped during COVID, I think that's lovely. Let's have like a fun one-year anniversary party. I think people still are going to really want to celebrate together, and it's an opportunity to kind of talk about looking forward. And when you, in my opinion, if you're looking forward to something, maybe that'll encourage you to do the right thing today and really start to be a little bit more aware of personal protection and washing your hands and wearing your masks and keeping everybody as safe as possible so we can go back to normal as quickly as we can, and, or whatever our new normal is going to be.
Yes, it remains to be seen. Nancy, do me a favor. Give us the address, the website, any contact information you want to give out. Where can people find your menus?
Sure. The restaurant's located at 219 Main Street in El Segundo, right at Main Street and Franklin, a block, which direction is that? South of Grand. Our website is sausal.com. That's SAUSAL.com, like short for Sausalito. And our menus are there. You can order online directly and prepay on our website. We offer curbside pickup. And we do delivery through DoorDash. And then, of course, there's dine-in. You can make reservations on Resy, and there's a link on our website for that as well. The rules during COVID are that we can't seat more than six people at a table. The rules, according to the health department, are that you're supposed to be from the same family. You're not supposed to be mixing families. We do have I don't know if you participate at all in a COVID pod. I am a single lady, and I have a couple of girlfriends of mine that are also single ladies, and we are participating in a pod together. And so we're open to seating people like that in a group, and I think that's fine. But, you know, wear a mask when you come in. You can take your mask off when you're at the table. But when you're getting up to use a restroom, please always wear a mask everywhere that you go, and help control the spread of the virus so that we can all be healthy.
Good advice. I have not used a public restroom during COVID. just
they're really
small, enclosed spaces.
It's the right time to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I know. They're really clean. Yeah. No,
they're
the
really
times
clean.
We've gone out for dinner. I've just avoided that situation. So, all right. We have got to wrap this up. This is the South Bay Show. We've been speaking with Nancy Vrankovich from Sausal in El Segundo. Nancy, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you,
Nancy.
It's been great.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
And thank you, Deanne. We just have a couple of more
weeks.
Happy
to be here. Yeah, thank you.
All right, that's our show, everybody. Thank you for joining us. And be sure to tune in tomorrow morning for Manhattan Beach Chamber 360. Bye-bye now.